In this episode of the CJ Evolution podcast, we welcome back my good friend, Dr. John Beyer, who's been on the show twice before, episode 54 and episode 150. He keeps coming back. This is going to be the third time. He is a wonderful guy. He spent nearly a decade in law enforcement in Southern California. He was a member of the SWAT team. He taught brand new officers. He got out of law enforcement. He's in the field of education now, but he's also a very successful author. He's written three books, Hunted, Soft Target, Operation Scorpion, and he always has projects on the burner. We had a great discussion. Again, you're going to love this episode. Dr. John Beyer coming up next. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women who work in the criminal justice field. Whatever you are doing, thank you for what you are doing. Be safe. We all support you. I know sometimes it doesn't seem like it. And the way we continue growing the podcast is through your support. If you rate and review the show on iTunes, I sure would appreciate it. And I got a message a while back from an officer named Salim Baba, and I hope I pronounced that right. He is a police officer in Algeria, and he reached out to me, and he wanted to tell me that he loves the episodes. Him and his officers listened to it, and I appreciate it, Salim. Big shout out to you all the way in Algeria. Stay safe, my friend. I know a lot of you drink coffee. Don't tell me you don't, because most of you do. If you do, you're going to love Four Sigmatic. Amazing products. They have cocos, elixirs, coffee. I love their mushroom coffee, most notably their lion's mane. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. Check them out. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. Here we go, folks. The one and only Dr. John Beyer. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have John R. Beyer on the show yet again, number three. And I'm so glad he's here. Wonderful guy. John, are you there, sir?
I'm here, Pat, and thank you and all your listeners. I really appreciate it. Man, three times. That's wonderful.
Yeah. You mean they keep inviting you back because you're just you're that guy that I want on the show, and you got a lot of law enforcement experience. You're in education. You got your PhD. You got a lot to offer, my friend, and I thank you for spending some of your valuable time with the listeners. Welcome. Anything new going on in John Beyer's life?
I think there's always new things. I'm working on a new novel. It's a little different for me. My novel, Iquitos, The Path Will Kill, came out in November. We've had a lot of book signings. That's very exciting. The fans are great. I mean, I just love meeting people. But I'm working on a new one, and it's more it's a police novel, but it's more psychological. It's he's a detective looking into his soul. He's going back home. I don't know where it's going, Pat. I really don't, but I'm excited. I'm about halfway through it, and a little bit different for me, but I'm pretty excited about it. I just this year in October, I also got Write Well Award by the Silver Pen Association of the United States, which is pretty neat, for one of my short stories. That was a nice award to get. Yeah, things are going great. Got a script I'm working on, a Western, which is different, but that's what my wife and I work on. We're actors on whenever we have time. And yeah, we just have a lot of things going.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And for those people who don't know who John is, or I didn't cover it in the bio, or the intro, he spent many years in Southern California as a officer. He was a training officer. He was a member of the SWAT team. And, John, I know I've asked you this before, but I'll ask again. What made you – first of all, thank you for your law enforcement service. And what made you get into law enforcement years ago?
Well, thanks, Pat, for that. I also thank you and all your listeners that are law enforcement or military. I appreciate that. Be honest with you, I was before I of age. Our neighbor, Don Bender, was a detective for the Riverside County Sheriff's Department. And back then, nobody ever moved. We all grew up together. And I grew up with his sons. And one day, he came to me and said, "Hey, have you ever thought of being in law enforcement?" I think I was like all of 18. And I said, "Yeah, you know, I've listened to you, and you know, I really respect you and all that." And then when I hit 21 or so, I thought, you know, maybe Don has something. So I talked to him a little bit more, and really, the idea of helping people I've always done that. I've done that. I was went to a Catholic school. We always had charities and things. I liked helping people. Mm. So I had a long discussion with him, and I applied. And I got accepted to the academy, and I never regretted it. Just the idea of going out, assisting people that needed it. And also taking some bad people off the streets, which might hurt other people. But it was an exciting time. I think that's the first time I've told people that. Yeah, Don Bender was a real real great guy. In fact, he became my lieutenant, then my captain, and that it was kind of neat. And it wasn't a small force. We had over 500 officers just in the Riverside area. But it was kind of a family, and that's the thing I really liked about being in law enforcement was family, and that's how I got into it. I really enjoyed assisting folks.
Yeah, and I know you're in education now. We could talk about that, but I imagine, John, that you still have friends that are on the force. Maybe you do. Mm. I'm assuming you do.
Oh, yes. Of course I do, yeah.
What do you think, this is probably a broad question, but I'll ask anyway. What do you think some of the challenges are? Because I think law enforcement has changed. I know it's changed for me before I retired for 23 years on the job. You did several years yourself. What do you think some of the challenges are now for some of them have been challenges for years, but what do you think some of the new challenges for law enforcement are?
I think the idea of going out and just protecting folks and doing your job. That's what I did. I'm sure you have, but I believe our officers now need to be so wary of how they approach people. I'm not sure how to exactly say this. We're living in a time that, even in education, I'm still in education. Sometimes you feel like you have to be so politically correct, and you're always self-doubting yourself, which is a horrible thing to do because, you need to do what you need to do. I was talking to my students not long ago because I asked, because, I'm almost a cop for almost 10 years, one, all that. And they say, well, what about, when a police officer shoots someone that might be unarmed? Mm-hmm. And I said, but you have to understand, you only have a tenth of a second sometimes to make that decision. So I gave an example to my students. I said, okay, so it's 2 a.m, you're in bed, you're an adult, and you have a weapon for safety next to your bed or in a safe location within hand's reach. And 2 a.m, you're awoken and some person's standing across from you in the room and it's dark and they have something in their hand. Do you have time to ask them what they're there for? No. And I said, and then all of a sudden it turns out that it's a cell phone and they were using a cell phone with their light on it to find your jewelry. So you've just made a mistake, but you don't have a lot of time. I said, that's the kind of world police officers live in now. Mm-hmm. We're always being judged, and teachers too. I mean, I'm sorry, teachers are we're always judged Monday morning quarterback, which is the easiest thing to do and the easiest way to find fault.
Yeah.
But in the real world, which we lived in and still do, you don't have that luxury. You want to go home to your family and children.
Yeah.
So sometimes mistakes happen. I mean, and that's what I look at. They're horrible, horrible mistakes.
Well, and I have some of the same discussions because I'm, as you know, John, I teach on the side. I'm going to be teaching more. And the example I use, and I love your example, but the example I use for my students when I teach is I said, imagine the NFL. We see it every time there's an NFL show on, if you watch football, I do, where there's a question of whether or not a receiver's both feet were in bounds. How many angles do they show of that reception and whether or not you get multiple angles? They analyze it. It goes up to New York. They come back. They show it 5 or 6 different times. And I asked the students, I said, do you think a police officer on the street gets that opportunity? Nope. We get one shot to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see on YouTube or a video is one angle. Going back to the analogy of the NFL reception.
Right.
So you got to keep that in mind. And I think the world we live in, like you said, I agree with you. I think it's a shame. We've always had that liability aspect in the back of our minds, but I think with a lot of officers and administrators, it's on the forefront now where a lot of us are so afraid to go out there and do something because we don't want to be on the news.
No, and from a psychological point of view, I mean, if you look at the biology and things that when in moments of stress, we get, as you know, tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. So we're just focused on the subject that we're there for. We're not, the peripheral isn't really in our mind at that point, especially if you have a person with a gun or another weapon. You're focused on that and only that. Whereas other people, especially if they're filming you with their phones or something, they get the whole vision of everything.
Exactly.
They're not in the moment. And when you're in the moment, that's all you have.
Yeah.
And you have to make a judgment call. And I know I've been called for certain things I have done and stuff. Nothing illegal or anything. But could you have made a better decision? Oh yeah, of course. You know, if I had what you had is the idea of I could sit down tomorrow, look at everything. Go, oh, you know, I could have done that better. And I'm talking about even being a father. Mm-hmm. You know, I've made some mistakes as a dad, and you know, and said, oh, you know, I probably yelled and I maybe knocked. I shouldn't have, but it was in a moment. And it's easy, like you said, it's easy to look at all that film and say, oh, you know, oh, they should have made that call. Well, they didn't have the opportunity. They didn't have the luxury of all that.
Yeah, and it's amazing how, and I don't think everybody out there, just to clarify, no, not every person out there, you know, thinks that way. But it's amazing to me, especially being in education, and I'm not trying to hammer the younger generation, but, you know, I teach, you know, a lot of millennials, a lot of younger people, and they, not all of them, but some of them have this mindset we were talking about earlier before we started, you know, a different kind of mindset that, you know, why didn't the cop just shoot the gun out of the guy's hand? Why didn't the cop shoot him in the leg or shoot the knife out of their hand? And I have to explain for several minutes, look, that's TV. That's the movies. It's not. And now, if I'm sitting there being perfectly, you know, just kind of walking at you and not, you know, not angling my body or running after you or zigzagging, yeah, it'll be that easier. But that's not reality, is it?
No. And your adrenaline's pumping, you know, and you know, if when we've been in situations, especially like in SWAT, so if we come out of a shooting situation, your hand's shaking. It's not you're a coward. I mean, that your adrenaline's pumping.
Of course.
I mean, even when you're driving, if somebody almost hits you and you swerve, I mean, my goodness, your pupils have dilated, your hands are quivering, and it's not because you're scared. It's like, holy goodness, I mean, I could have lost it there, or something terrible could have happened. It's just the physiology of the body. But yeah, I mean, I get that asked a lot, you know, why don't I said, well, one, I'm probably not a good enough shot to shoot somebody's gun out of their hand in that moment. But like you said, it's not Hollywood. I mean, Bruce Willis, I love the guy as an actor, but, you know, when you fall, you know, five or six stories down, you're not going to get up and probably punch anybody.
No. And I tell students, I said, you know, as much as you don't want to hear this, what's the bigger target, center mass or your wrist or your hand or your arm?
Exactly. And that's what we're taught. I mean, you want to put the person down, you know, you hope you don't kill them, of course. But you want to put them down and trying to get somebody's, because usually they're flailing their arms. They're running, like you said, towards you. It's very hard to hit a moving target. I mean, it just is. And it's just a fact of life.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit or in length off the air, John, about, you know, and I love the brave men and women in blue out there as you do. But so many of us in law enforcement, We just, and I speak from experience, I know you probably can too, is that we just get into that rut where we just, everybody's is negative and everybody out there is a criminal. And I want your take on what I'm about to say. I think one of the, and what I used to teach young officers or kind of when I was coaching and mentoring them is you got to have friends outside of law enforcement. You just have to have other people that you're talking to outside law enforcement. At least that's my opinion. Because the best thing I ever did was start being open to other people coming into my circle and coming into, you know, being friends with me that had nothing to do with law enforcement.
I think that's healthy, mentally, physically. You got to get away from that negativity. And yeah, I mean, of course, we're all a little bit cynical. Mm-hmm. Heck, I was cynical when I was, you know, 15 years old before I got into anything. But you can't just hang out. I mean, when I was in law enforcement, I had friends in real estate. I had friends in banking. I had friends at construction. And, you know, after my shift or something, I might spend the weekend at the Colorado River because I live in Southern California. We'd go in boating. Not one law enforcement officer. And trust me, I love the law enforcement officers. They're all my buds and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But some of them negative. Some would come with us because they didn't want to hang out with just the cynical stuff. Because yeah. that can drag you down. Plus, it gives you a bad outlook on the average person, out there. And maybe you'll agree or disagree, but I think as a law enforcement officer, 97% of the people I ran into were great people.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, yeah, John.
It's just a very small percentage that you know have crossed the line. And because they got to remember that, even in education, teachers can get pretty very cynical. And I understand that. You know, when you've taught a lesson, as you know, a week, 2 weeks, and it seems like when they do a project, you think, was I here for the last week or two? Did I teach anything? You can get pretty cynical. So, I mean, come on. If you're in education, I don't care if it's adults, kids, or whatever, that happens. And so you on the weekends, you hang out with people that aren't in that business. Yeah. I mean, don't exclude them, of course. But I know some teachers now that there's no way I'd go to the river with, I'll tell you, because you're going to probably try to drown yourselves.
And it's people don't understand, John, or there are some people that understand that you can control how you think. You don't have to let everything get to you. You don't. Yeah, things suck sometimes and life happens and you might deal with difficult people. But you control, getting back to that mindset, you control how you're going to react, right?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you're the only one that's in control, mm-hmm. not someone else. So you have to – if you have a mindset of cynical and everybody – you need to change that. And then be that you go do something with friends or even if you just go by yourself somewhere and just really start thinking. And I know it's not easy. Humans don't like change. We know that. People don't like change. But change is the way life is. I mean, I hate to keep saying is, but that is how it happens. That, you know, what Monday is not Tuesday. Tuesday is not Wednesday. Things happen every day that might change. Sometimes we don't like it. But if you change your mindset and say, this is the way it is. Mm-hmm. And if you say, oh, you know, everybody's a dirtbag out there, a scumbag, you got to realize, no, 97% of those folks are nice. Those guys that and the women that wave to you as you drive down in your unit, hey, those are nice folks. Or you're talking to, you know, the person at the coffee shop while you're in uniform, or somebody comes up to you while you're in uniform and says, hey, thanks for what you're doing, man. I know it's dangerous. That should tell you, see, I can change my mindset. Mm-hmm. I can be more positive.
Mm-hmm. So how do you – because you got a PhD in clinical psychology. So mm-hmm. when people come to you and say, you know, Dr. Beyer, okay, I'm hearing you say – you know, to change. But you know, John, it's easier said than done with. I mean, I understand that. You understand it. A lot of listeners do. But what happens if you get those people that say, okay, that's great. I need to change. But how do I do it?
Well, it's more than just one conversation at that point.
Yeah.
You just have to give them examples. It's like, well, you know, what somebody says offends me. And then you say, well, why would it offend you? Mm-hmm. Or you have to say, if you're offended, you've made a choice. You've made a choice to be offended. Mm-hmm. You have to look at the source that's saying something.
Yeah.
If you're a law enforcement officer and somebody calls you a negative word or curses at you, you have to look at the source. And you say, really, is that person's opinion of me worth me being offended?
Sure.
If I choose to be offended, I own that. So, and I think you have to teach people or advise them, or I don't really like the word advise. I want them to see, I want to show them some tools to understand you don't have to be offended. You have to own it and say, I'm not offended by that. That's just who they are. This is who I am. Examples would be we live in a time of victimhood. Everybody wants to be a victim. And we understand and feel empathy toward people that say that someone, and I'll just bring this up, the example, say someone has cancer and they've survived it. I think that's awesome, marvelous. But what I sometimes hear people say is the first time you meet them, I'm a cancer survivor. And I say, that is awesome. God, I'm so glad for you. Prayers worked out, medicine worked out, whatever. That's great. But you are more than just a cancer survivor. You're a mother. You're a father. You have wonderful children. You have a great job. And all of a sudden, you see them looking like, oh, I don't have to label myself.
Yeah.
I don't have to use the victim. And I think then you start seeing people really looking into themselves saying, I am more than that.
Yeah.
That's part of me, and that's cool. That's part of me. But I am so much more than just that. And I think that's when people start understanding. And it's not easy. I've had a lot of people say, you're full of it. You don't understand. Okay. And that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Well, it's like you said, though. I mean, it comes, it's, what is it? There's a term, and it's cognitive reconstructuring, right? You got to change your way that you're thinking. And life is learning, right? I mean, we're always striving to become better, to better ourselves. And that's part of it, right? Mentally changing the way you think.
Right, it's transformational change. I mean, you're transforming yourself into someone else. I mean, you're the same person, but instead of being a victim, you're now no longer that. Now, of course, that is part of you. I understand that. But you can use that to make yourself stronger. If you've gone through this tragedy of, like my example, having cancer, survived it, what a powerful force you can be for those folks that are going through it currently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a transformation that we have to make within ourselves. And it's not easy. None of this stuff is just, you can just read a book and go, oh, okay, I'm cured. No, it's really got to deal with yourself and sometimes battle with yourself to say, because it's easy to be a victim. And I think going back to a point you made earlier about, and I don't want to bash millennials because my kids are.
So am I.
Yeah, okay, there you go. But the victimhood is really taught. And if they go to college, I truly believe a lot of the colleges are that, and if you've seen lately the politics, and I don't want to go into politics, but a lot of that is victimhood, and we need to get out of that. It's a dangerous, dangerous slope to be standing on.
Well,
because what do you do if we're all victims? There's really not a plan for that. It sounds great, I'm a victim of this, I'm a victim of that, but we've got to get past it. I'm a little worried about that, what's being taught and what's being expressed, and part of it is what I teach my students, and it'll all make sense in a way, so I'm just trying to segue into this, is to research. I teach research. I mean, as a writer, as you know, research is number one. I mean, you should have some talent, obviously, but research is number one when you're writing books. And you have to dig deep into the research. You can't just go by social media, a little sound bites and things like that. And I'm afraid millennials are not. They're getting most of their research from social media, which is not in depth. Plus, you don't know who's giving out information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have to look it up. And I, no matter what grade level I've taught, if they said, hey, Dr. Beyer, he taught us research. And what did he teach you? You have to have three separate sources of research for any topic, and Wikipedia doesn't count.
Exactly.
Yeah.
About to say Wikipedia is not a source.
No, yeah, I use it sometimes as a jumping off spot, because they'll do have some links there, and so I can't say I never use it, because if I'm looking up a topic for a blog or a short story, I might go there and go, oh, here you go, and you bounce off. But no, would I ever use it as a site? Probably not.
Yeah, and what I love about you, what you said, John, about victims, having that victimhood mentality, because I agree with you. And the one thing I told my kids when they were younger. And I used to tell my kids, I don't tell them that much anymore because I think it resonated, sunk in, is that the world doesn't owe you anything.
Mm-hmm.
The world does not owe you a damn thing. If you All want right. something, go out there and work for it and get it. The world doesn't owe you anything. If you think the world owes you something for being you, you're in a dream world.
Right. And another thing they always like to say is, well, that's not fair. And I said, well, in the old days, when a woman gave birth, the doctor would be there and spank the little baby on the bottom to make sure it was breathing. I said, how's that fair that, this fully grown man or woman doctor is pulling the kid out and slapping him around a little bit? That's not fair. I said, that kind of tells you what life's going to do to you, right?
Slap you.
Well, there's no child abuse meant, but.
Well, let's change gears a little bit. You got books out there. You got Hunted. You got Soft Target. You got Operation Scorpion. You're working on other work. What made you get into writing? I know you're an academic. You're a PhD. But what made you say, you know what? I want to start writing great books. You've written several successful books. What was the catalyst behind it?
I've been asked that before, Pat. And I've always written. I've always been a voracious reader ever since I can't remember not reading. And when I was in elementary school, I used to write little tiny short stories. And one of my first one was Prisoner. I mean, I can't believe I remember this. This is, I know why. Prisoner of the Sands. And it was a little short story about World War II because my father fought in World War II. And it was a little short story. And I can remember that. And I just kept writing. I love telling stories. And I think because when you tell a story, there's always a reason for it, not just the plot, but there are messages to put out there and about humanity and self-worth. And I'm not saying at 11, 12 years old, I was thinking that deeply. I was just writing stories. But when I looked at that one not too long ago, I'm like, wow. Actually, it had a point to it for an 11-year-old. That was pretty cool. I just love writing, and I don't know how to even express. I've written nonfiction. I wrote for magazines, newspapers, you know, interviewing people. I had one gig for, gosh, almost 2 years. That was I can't remember the title of the column. But what I did was I tested, like, brand-new motorhomes, cars, boats, and things like that, and then did reviews on them. I think it was, I don't want to say anything politically incorrect, but I think it was Men's Toys or something like that.
You can't say that, John.
I know. Gosh, I'm in trouble now. You know, gender bias. But that was back in the days when you could say that and not get sued. But, I mean, what a great gig. I mean, my goodness, you know, drive a Porsche 911 for the weekend and then write a review. Wow. You know, I want to sign back up to that one again. But, yeah, I just always liked writing. And, and actually, it's kind of neat when somebody will write to you and say, I really like that. Or I remember one time walking through a Barnes & Noble. Oh, this is probably 10 years ago. And I walked by this guy, and he's nodding his head. And it was a magazine that I had written something for. And I kind of snuck a peek over. And he was actually reading the article, and he's nodding his head. And I thought, hey, that's good, instead of shaking his head and saying, this guy can't write. So that was kind of a neat thing. So I've always written.
So what advice would you give? Because I've always said, and I know we talked about this before, I think the majority of cops out there have a good book in them, or an article, or whatever, a blog. What advice would you give for an aspiring author out there to get into it?
I think you need to trust yourself. And if you want to, in fact, it's funny you mentioned that, because I have a friend that's a law enforcement officer where I live. And he said to me, God, this was like not even a week ago. And he goes, God, I got, you know, a story. I've got so many books I want to write. And I just looked and I said, then go home and write them. Yeah. Don't tell me you want to write them. Just sit down and write them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to do it. Don't tell people you have stories. Don't tell them. Sit down. And it's, you know, as you know, writing is kind of a lonely life sometimes. You know, you're sitting in your study or wherever you're writing, kitchen table, wherever you find the spot, and put down in words what you want to write. What is it you want? What's the story you want to tell? And you've got to know that the reader doesn't know what you are writing. So you've got to explain to the reader. It's like you're the guide. You're the literary guide that's going to take somebody on a wonderful adventure that you're creating. You're creating a world for that reader to enjoy and go with you. So take the chance. Get behind the keyboard or break out the pen and pencil and write it however you want to. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid of criticism. Well, I think the fault for many new writers is they'll send something out and they reject it once and they just, oh my gosh, you know, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay. But I've been rejected many times, both personally and in literary. Just that little joke there. sorry. Yeah, but just take the chance and do it. And
but I think but like we were talking about, John, is mindset. Because, and I agree with you, you know, it is it's taking that chance. But so many people, and to go back to your example, your personal example, you got rejected. Most people, John, you know it, are going to stop and say, well, screw that stuff. I got rejected. I'm not going to get back on that horse again. And the people that really, really make it and are successful are the people that learn from their failures and they keep going.
Exactly. But isn't how anything work?
Exactly.
I mean, the first time I used a skill saw, it wasn't a very straight line. But after a while, I could really do it. Sometimes you don't even have to chalk or mark off the wood. It can still be pretty straight. Not the first time. So my book, Hunted, got rejected, oh gosh, 15, 16, 17 times. Mm-hmm. And finally, Black Opal Books picked it up. And let me tell you, Hunted is a brutal book. It's a brutal book. It's my first novel. Mm-hmm. And my wife is my first editor, and she's an English major, but she's a school district administrator now, and she was pretty brutal. I mean, there was a lot of blood in the book, but let me tell you, when she got done editing, there was a lot of red ink flowing like blood, you know? And I appreciated it.
Huh? Hence the name, Hunted.
Yeah,
a lot of blood everywhere.
Hunted, yeah. But she said it's probably one of the bloodiest books she read, but it's not a slasher. I don't mean it like that.
Yeah.
But the Zachary Marshall bad guy in it, he's a pretty evil person. But I think it was well written. At least people have said that.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, people give up too easily, and don't. I mean, you just have to write, trust your instincts, and just tell the story. Don't copy somebody else. I've heard people, I want to write like Clive Cussler. Well, I'd like to have his money, but I want to write like these guys. Well, don't write like them. Write like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell the story the way you're going to tell the story, and don't be afraid of characters coming in. I don't make, which is probably I'll be slapped by the writing associations, but I don't follow a lot of the writing things. I don't have billboards in my room or paper or chalkboards and outlines, which is fine. If that's how you write, that's fine. I just kind of write. My characters tell me how the story's going. Mm-hmm. And my wife always gets those characters aren't real. Well, to me, they don't tell them that, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And she was at a Dallas airport one time, and she called, and she goes, "You're not going to believe it." I said, "What? Yuri is here. Yuri is my protagonist in Soft Target. He's Russian."
Yeah.
And she goes, "He's sitting across." I said, "Oh, I thought he was fictional. I didn't think he existed." She goes, "He's here. I can see him."
Yeah, you were giving me giving me a hard time about that in Israel.
I know. See, I thought you knew all. No, I'm just kidding. You know, those brain researchers. I don't know. So.
Well, you're doing great things, John. What's your? Do you have a morning routine? Because I've always, when I talk to people successful like you, a lot of them have some sort of morning routine, and it's cool if you don't. But I was just wondering if you had one, what it is.
My morning routine, because I'm still in education, is get up and read the paper. I always read the paper. I'm old school. I tried online news. I like the paper. I just my coffee. That's what I do. Then, but when I get home, I do a couple of chores, and then. But in the evening, I write at least 1 hour a night. Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't have to be on a book, but I write 1 hour a night at least. Now, if you're really into it, you can knock out 5-6 pages, and then you can have to edit. But if you're really writing from your heart and stuff, you're pretty tired after an hour.
Yeah.
I don't know how these guys will sit down for 6-7 hours. Now, when I retire, I'll probably get up and at least put 3 hours a day into writing. But, when you're working full time, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
But you've got to set time aside every day. And if you're writing a blog, if you're writing a short story, if you're writing a novel, and that's going back to what you said, maybe instead of just trying to strike out on a novel, maybe some short stories, because there's a lot of online magazines out there, a lot,
yeah.
Hundreds, and they're always hungry for new writers, they're always hungry for new ideas and new concepts.
Well, and that's one of the things that I really love about the age we're living in right now, is because we've talked about this before, it really is technology-wise, it really is a wonderful, amazing time we're in right now, because as you know, John, a lot of people self-publish now. They don't have to go through a publisher, traditional routes, and you can do blogs, something that wasn't available just a handful of years ago. So if you want to write, there's really no reason why you can't, and you can't put your content out there, because there's just so many different platforms to do so.
Exactly, and when you put something out there, say you write a short story, and there's a lot of free publications out there, and you can self-publish your short stories or whatever. And if you get out there, all of a sudden you get a couple of comments, on the magazine, there's always comments sections, and all of a sudden you get a couple of good comments, and you think, wow, I can do this, mm-hmm. I can do it, And I think that's important. I think it's good for the psyche to be appreciated, to be valued. And if somebody sees something you write, they go, oh, that was a really good story. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of instills you, and it kind of makes you want to write more, be more successful, and not be afraid to throw it out there.
Well, but you got to be prepared for the criticism, like we were talking about, because it's not all roses and unicorns and rainbows. People, the more you're out there in the public eye, and John, you know this, being an author, a successful author, you've gotten criticized. I've gotten criticized for the show, and that's part of it.
No, I had one of my novels. I mean, I got blasted by a reviewer, and my tail went between my legs. I had to hide in the closet for a week or two. I'm like, really? It's that bad? But, you know, then I came out of the closet. Well, I shouldn't say it like that. But that's probably politically incorrect again.
You saw the light, my friend. You were like, you were aware.
Everything you say, you know. But no, I got back to the keyboard and said, you know what? That's just one person's opinion. You know, and does their opinion mean anything? I looked them up, and they were just some reviewer. So who knows? You know, it's just like, you know, when you go to a film, a movie, and it's been panned by the experts, that's the one you want to go see because it's probably going to be very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Well, John Beyer, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show. You're an inspiration. You're doing great things. We're going to have all your books linked up in the show notes. Any final parting words that you want to tell the listeners out there, sir?
I think what we've talked about, Pat, and this whole, most of it is, if you want to try something different, if you want change, we know it's not easy, but go ahead and do it. And if you have a story to tell, don't tell somebody you have a story to tell. Tell yourself, grab a piece of paper, grab a keyboard, write it, and let the public see. You may be the next best novelist. You may not be, but you know, it's great. And just psychologically, it's great to get that off your chest and write it and put your feelings, your emotions, and don't be afraid of it. Yeah, tell the story you want to tell.
Because what's the biggest thing people say on their deathbed, John? You know this, that they regret they didn't take more chances.
Right, exactly.
Well, my friend, much success to you in the future. I can't wait for your next book to come out. We'd like to have you back on. You're always welcome back on. And thank you for coming on the show, my friend.
Well, thank you, Pat. Thank you for all your listeners and to listening to me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you being on, sir. And much success, and I'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you.
All righty, sir. Goodbye.
Such a great episode with Dr. Beyer. Some of the takeaways that I got from this episode, and I hope you took away some valuable information. For me, it was don't live in negativity. If you have negative people around you, and we all do, limit yourself with them. There's nothing, there's no invisible hand, invisible force keeping you with them. You can take them in small doses. And I also loved what we talked about going for your dreams. Reaching for those goals, folks. We only live once. Remember, regret is the biggest thing people think about when the end is near. Folks, thank you so much for listening to the show. Much support for all what you're doing out there in law enforcement, criminal justice. We love all of you. Take care. Be safe. Stay tuned for more great episodes on the CJ Evolution Podcast.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.